You're listening to the Whistleblower Newsroom. I'm Celia Farber, and I'm here with my co-host, Christina Borgeson. Christina, say hi.
Hello.
So we talk about almost exclusively very dark things on this show. To my heart, almost nothing is darker than what we're going to talk about today, but also more hopeful because the pushback is formidable. We're talking about mandatory vaccinations pushed and enforced by states through the schools and through virtually every other facet of society you could imagine, but primarily they're targeting the schools. Mandatory compulsory vaccination with no exemptions, not even medical, not even religious, certainly not philosophical. They're even going after homeschooling now, and this is a state-by-state battle. As most of us know, California already fell, and New York. The battle was on in New Jersey last week, and I was actually there in Trenton, New Jersey, at the State House, the most impressive, incredible protest. I don't know the numbers, but it looked to be thousands of people who were there from morning till nightfall, chanting, not moving, chanting, kill the bill, among other chants. And the bill in question is called S2173, and it would eliminate vaccine exemptions for school children in New Jersey, but it had this strange caveat that was added a few days before the protests were on January 13, which was that private schools, you could get a religious exemption if your child went to private school, but not public schools. So then the term segregation came up, and issues of race came up because this would now disproportionately affect black children. So there were some African American Democrat hero politicians who withstood the bill. I'm going a little too fast here. Our guest, Rita Palma, she's going to come on after a short clip we're going to play. She has been at the forefront of this battle since 2006. She is a mother of three, and everybody I ran into at the protest said, or many people said, you've got to talk to Rita Palma. So today we're going to have the pleasure. But first, I want to play a clip. The clip, when you hear it, will be, I would say, self-explanatory. Jesse?
My name is Antonio Mazzarelli. I'm not even in the school district. I'm in the Spackville School District. I'm going to apologize up front if I become a bit emotional here. It's not what my comments are not directed at you. You just happen to be the people that are in front of me. I'm going to start with a little story. My second oldest child, my oldest child's in college. My second oldest child literally is one of the smartest kids in the entire Spackenkill School District. She has the highest grade point average in the school district. She was the class president. She was captain of the soccer team. She would have been captain of the basketball team. She read the morning announcements. She has not been a sick one day of school in high school, not one. Right? So she's literally one of the healthiest and one of the smartest children in the entire school. She was thrown out of that school because I refused to follow the New York State mandated vaccine schedule. Okay, I have to sign over guardianship of her to my brother-in-law and my sister-in-law in Pennsylvania. She no longer lives with me. You want to talk about separating children from their parents? Separated children from their parents. Okay, January 29th, that young lady turns 18. She comes back to Spackenkill High School and she's going to graduate from Spackenkill High School. Now, you might say to yourself, wait a minute, that's insane. Why would she get kicked out of high school for a few months and then be able to come back? She can come back because the laws don't apply to adults in New York State. Okay? Now, why don't they apply to New York adults? Here's why. Everybody in this room got a handful of the vaccines that are given today. A handful. Back in 1985, there were three vaccines, MMR, DTP, and polio. That's it. That's what was required. All those vaccines, by the way, wear off. So if you haven't had your booster shots, which is probably every single teacher, right? And if the teachers haven't had all the other vaccines that have been added to the list, pneumonia, meningitis, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, every single teacher in the school is not vaccinated to the level that the children need to be vaccinated at, okay? So they threw my kids out of school and my kids were just exactly like the teachers. It is insane. The woman was talking about the HPV being insane and flu being insane. Listen, you got two choices. Either you believe that the government can stick things into your children, or you believe that they cannot. And I know I have some Democrats and some Republicans in here. And I'm going to say one thing. If you are a Democrat, how would you like Donald Trump to dictate what gets injected into your children? And Republican or Democrat, how would you like Bernie Sanders to decide what gets stuck into your children? You know who gets to decide what goes into my children? Me. Me. That's who gets to decide. Okay? Now, my older son, and by the way, that young lady was accepted to an Ivy League school. Okay? My older son got better grades than her. All right? So my first two children are literally in the top 1% of all children in the state or in the country in terms of education. And my next two children are thrown out of school. I sit there and I see them every day at home, and it drives me crazy. My wife is a nurse. She is not a teacher. She works full time. I am a computer guy. I'm not a teacher. My children are being denied an education. We have to fight. Every one of us has got to fight. It's insane. There are 270 more vaccines in the works. If you think this is the end, this is the beginning. Right now, there are 26 shots that are mandated, 43 different vaccines and 26 physical shots that are mandated for children. That went into effect in September. We are in January. We are only a few months later, and they want to add 20 more shots. They want to almost double it, right? It's flu is one a year?
If you could.
Is it? Okay. All I'm going to say to you is it's insane. Before you throw children out of school, you need to have a mountain of irrefutable evidence that they are a danger, and they do not. And here's the last thing I'm going to say. If you, everybody in this room, if you have ever wondered what you do during slavery, the Holocaust, or the Civil Rights Movement, you are doing it right now. Silence is concurrence. We all have to fight.
Wow. Rita Palma is a Long Island mother of three boys, 23, 22, and 19. She's been a vaccine choice activist since 2006, and she's the president of the New York Alliance for Vaccine Rights and the founding officer of Children's Health Defense New York. Welcome, Rita.
Thank you. Thanks for having me, Celia.
Oh, it's such a pleasure to have you. It's hard to know where to begin. So I don't think I actually told our listeners that there was a victory, what felt at the time like an enormous victory outside the State House in Trenton the other evening when S-2173, it kind of just fell into the gutter without being voted on. I know that's not the legal way to say it. What's the correct way to say it?
Well, how I would put it is so much pressure was applied that they couldn't get the votes. In fact, when they made that amendment that you mentioned, they actually made it worse for themselves, because then they made it having a child educated is a privilege of the rich and elite, which gave it an even worse marketing label. So to me, when they did that, I was like, wow, they're coming unglued. They don't know what to do with these people. So they had, day after day, they had thousands of people showing up, and they just kept pushing and pushing. And when you have that many people, like, in your physical presence, it clouds your judgment. And the Senate Majority Leader, he couldn't get the votes together. Everything fell apart, and boy, was he annoyed. So he shut out some sort of speech like, hey, this is a good bill, we're going to war on it next session.
I don't want to interrupt you, but I'd like to actually read his quote, because it gave me chills, and not the good kind. We're talking about Senate President Steve Sweeney. Now, first, let's just identify him. I wrote an article about this in the Epoch Times, and I couldn't. Now, he's not the sponsor of the bill, is that right?
No, he's not the sponsor, but he's the guy at the head of the Senate. So he's the one who gets to, you know, call what bills are going to go to the floor for a floor vote. So he's rounding up the floor votes, and he couldn't round them up. He's got all the power in the Senate.
So that's why he was the go-to guy for. So let me read his. I thought this was a very threatening, menacing, and frankly, I mean, arrogant goes without saying. But I was really shocked by this quote. It's so anti-democracy. Here's the quote. day after the victory for the, what would you like to be called? I know that they like to use the term anti-vax. What's your term of choice?
A vax choice advocate.
Okay, so yeah. Victory for the vax choice movement. Sweeney said, "We're ready to go to war on this, and we will. We will pass this bill. It's not an easy one, and a lot of bills we do aren't easy and take time to get through. But this is about public health. It's about protecting people." Wow.
Wow. Yeah. Wow. Are you kidding me? You're going to war? To come out with a quote like that and know that he's got the responsibility of being quoted far and wide, to come out with something like that just shows me that he's cracking, that he's becoming
unhinged. It's a deranged quote, right?
I mean, yeah.
Go to war against parents who are out there protesting because in many cases their children have already been damaged by vaccines, and now they're losing the right to prevent them from yet more rounds of vaccines if they want to go to school at all. That's what he calls about protecting people. He's got to be, forgive me, out of his mind.
He's got to be out of his mind. And I'm sure his colleagues and compatriots looked at that quote and said he actually used the term war. We've got a bunch of kids, mommies, parents outside of our doors chanting on their own dime, and he's saying we're going to go to war with them. Wow, what a PR train wreck. So to me, that quote
or
will
is
ring.
It? Or is it because the pharmaceutical and I would say military and industrial state-backed media has weaponized everybody against people who protest, not everybody, but and more every day a new vaccine-aware person is tragically born, right? Because there something happens to their child, and then there's another one. So how do they not think this movement is growing fast and furious, from what I can tell?
Yes, exponentially, and you say that another parent, you know, flips every day. I'm going to say 1,000 parents, and they don't even have to have vaccine injury attached to their life anymore. That's their neighbor, that's their friend, that's their cousin, that's their sister, brother, whatever. People are seeing vaccine injury occur, and they're waking up just on that. Many years ago, when I first got involved in this, I would say the vast majority of parents of people involved in it were parents who had suffered vaccine injuries in their family, but now I'm going to give it, I don't know, a 60-40 split. 40% of them are parents who are staying ahead of the curve and are listening to parents who have no reason to lie, nothing to lose, and they are delivering their message. So, you know, the truth army, the soldiers of the message are coming out, especially now since we are so profoundly threatened. New York lost its right virtually 100% to refuse vaccines and have your kids go to any type of school. So witnessing that from, you know, Canada, New Jersey, really nationwide, has really put the fire in people saying, hey, this is a reality. This is going to happen. I've got to start talking. I've got to start coming forward. It's my life. So I'm seeing vocalization like I've never seen before, which is such a relief because, you know, 14 years ago, 12 years ago, when I really started getting active like this, I would beg people, you must come forward, you must tell your story. Oh, no, no, no. People would say, I can't do that. It's shame in the community, et cetera. And so that is so changing. And, you know, it's great to see everybody come forward and share and engage support. I'm seeing support. I'm seeing, you know, the common ground of even people who vaccinate say, you know, you're right. They can't be for everybody. You can't get the same results with every single medical procedure. So I'm on your side. I understand I understand that choice is the way that we have to go here.
And Rita, don't you think that there's got to be the same number of parents inside the media complex whose children are being damaged? CNN, all of these, you know, they know the truth.
They know the truth.
Yeah.
And if you get them to the side, they'll be honest with you, say, I can't cover this. Fox can't go near vaccines. But they're afraid of a couple of things. They're under the golden handcuffs, meaning the media, you know the commercials. You sit down to watch any news show, any show for that matter, and 50% of the commercials are for drugs. So they don't want to make the pharmaceutical companies angry. They don't want them to pull their advertising. Okay. And then the second thing is, you know, we're still a minority. So the network, if they present themselves as even borderline anti-vaccine, and in some people's minds that means if you're not 100% supportive of the vaccination program as the ACIP and the CDC presented to us, then suddenly you're anti-vaccine, okay, there could be like a boycott. You know, some of the doctors, some of the organizations that are in fact supported by the pharmaceutical companies could get their members to arrange some sort of a boycott of a particular product or a particular station or a particular company. You know what I mean? So it's complicated. But of course, the common denominator here is money. They don't want to lose business. They don't want to lose membership. So we as, you know, soldiers of the message, we have to push it. We, you, me, parents that are listening to you right now, parents out there vaccinating your kids or who just want to stay ahead of the curve, we have to push the message, change society's temperature regarding this issue. And from that, it will trickle up to the media. It will trickle up to our politicians. It will trickle up to the courts. If those that are at the top of the power structure gaze down and hear a different conversation, then they will adapt their message as well and their stance. I think that's my opinion.
I was so impressed by the protest, not just the size of it, but the mood of the people. Everybody was so that you could just feel it, that this is a really really good-hearted movement, and people were so mm-hmm. kind to one another, and there were these miraculous boxes of pizza that would appear out of nowhere and then be passed around, and just the sheer, you could tell nobody was even contemplating leaving, you know, hour after hour after hour, and then finally everybody started just roaring and crying out in jubilation. And I asked a little boy standing next to me, what just happened? And he said, we won. And I just, it was so moving. It was such a moment. And then the next morning to see this, to get this like jackboot quote from Sweeney, if you could just speak to, and then also I saw on Twitter that was one of the senators who was already pretty severely penalized for his stance. Could you speak to that?
Oh, yes. Lagana. Well, I'm in New York, so I'm getting this sort of, you know, through the same channels that, you know, I'm not
right.
in charge of any sort of
I sometimes think
New
of
Jersey.
New York and New Jersey as the same state, but I know
oh. Well, you know what? We're going to be moving in a united direction, that's for sure. I'm in touch with some leaders from New Jersey, and I said, you know what? We have to help each other to the extent that we can.
Yeah,
bodies
and Christina,
count,
we're sitting right next to me, lives in New Jersey. Where in New Jersey do you live,
yeah.
Christina?
I live near New Brunswick.
New Brunswick,
yeah.
Okay. So Trenton, in fact, is closer to my house than Albany is, so that's kind of kind
there
of
you
happy.
Go, yeah.
So, you know, I mean, we border each other, so it would be easy for some of us to jump over. But as far as, you know, retribution, we'll see what happens. The first thing that Sweeney did is he took away Lagana's membership in the health committee. So that's obvious, and he's wielding his power in a very conspicuous manner. Sure. Why not?
Okay.
They can switch out committee members.
I don't understand.
They do all kinds of shenanigans that you would question them. But you know what? They're not going to create any law that's going to rein in their power. So they do all kinds of things. Like in New York State, for a certain bill, not the repeal bill, but another bill, they actually switched out committee members because they couldn't get something through the committee in the assembly. So they took out two members that were no's, said, you're out, let's put in two members that we know we can count on.
Are you
and
serious?
We'll pass the bill.
Okay, so
yeah.
I don't know. So so it's a very thin facade of democratic processes that are, in fact, completely run and controlled by these people.
Correct.
Yes.
Yeah, as a matter of fact.
And how do you overcome that as protesters?
You get 4,000 people to show up. I mean, that's the simplest formula. Numbers always win. And John Gilmore and I try to hammer that point home with people. If 1,000 people show up, you win. It's that simple. So they
because
this is
what?
How they
because they're intimidated, because they don't want to be publicly shamed.
Everything, all of the above, because
okay.
they know that those 1,000 people standing in the freezing cold for 12 hours represent thousands more. And this, if you're willing to sit there, you know, and chant till your throat is raw and freeze with your kids, that means you're certainly going to vote against the person who opposes your views, and you're going to walk the streets to make sure that that representative suffers if they do if they do come in on the wrong side of history. So they realize the political calculus to all of this. So and New York is proving it. We didn't have the numbers on June 13th, the day that we lost the religious exemption, but we are certainly in their back pockets now. We have pop-up protests going on all over the state constantly. We are showing up at their events. We are showing up at their town halls. We are showing up at their fundraisers. We are showing up at their offices. We are getting in their faces saying, why did you do this to my kid? Why don't you meet my kid and explain to him why he is a health hazard? The next step that we're going to be taking in New York, we've actually already taken it a few groups, we're going to be showing up at their homes. It's completely legal. Mm-hmm. We can go out into the street with pickets, with signs to picket, and we can, you know, we can embarrass them in front of their neighbors, their friends, the mailman, the guy walking the dog. So this is what we're doing. They have upended so many people's lives. There is nothing at this point that we won't do that isn't within the bounds of legality that, you know, obviously there's no violence here, but there's plenty that we can do to assemble and get our message out there that is completely within the bounds of the law.
Which frontier, or maybe you can speak to these two different frontiers, and I was going to say which one is more critical, religious exemptions versus medical exemptions?
Okay, what's more important? Both are equally. The medical exemption, we have a bill right now in drafting. I just have to get to my own senator some changes to what she sent to me. So that's happening as we speak. The religious exemption, I don't know if the state legislature would revisit that topic exactly. What I'd like to do is revisit it in another form, repackage, rethink, remarket. And my thoughts, I haven't come to any solid conclusion yet, but I've always thought that why should only religious people be entitled to refuse these things? Mm. So now that we have sort of a fresh notebook on the issue, and like I said, I don't think they're going to go backwards with the religious, maybe we should go forward with something else. Maybe an informed consent exemption is what makes sense. Maybe a conscientious belief exemption is what makes sense. I'm talking it over with a few different people who are more of the liberal Democrat mindset, because that's the majority that we're dealing with. And we're trying to craft something that'll make sense. My own senator is committed to helping us with the right bill. She's hearing us. My district happens to be both Democrat and Republican. It's almost a balance of the two. So she's reasonable. She's a little bit more conservative than the typical liberal Democrat, which is good. And she does believe that, you know, parents' choice, a parent should be able to determine medical procedures for their kids. So I'm very, very lucky that I have her right now. And I'm taking advantage of that luck for sure. So you know, both are extremely important, you know, parents' choice. But the medical exemption, I think we're closer to getting that resolved.
Okay,
I think we're closer. Yeah.
But the religious exemption brings up the very, I would say, primordial, like ancient, original battle about religious freedoms in this country and about separation of church and state and so on and so forth. Mm-hmm. So there's like much deeper waters there, right?
Yes, I think so. Yes, that's my personal belief. But we're dealing with a majority that doesn't respect religion as much as others and I don't mean to get partisan on all of this, but the reality is that the Democrats that are now in control of the New York State, legislature aren't very respectful of religious beliefs. They just aren't.
Okay, well, let me put it more bluntly then. If they were to get the evangelicals against them, if they were to get the, you know, huge portions of the population that whose lives revolve, for example, around fighting abortion, right? And there are aborted fetal cells in vaccines, wouldn't that be a big problem for them?
It would, as long as those evangelicals are typically Democratic voters. And I'll give you some solid examples that we're making headway into. The African-American community, we have connected with a large group of African-American religious leaders who are very angry about this bill and others. so we have common grounds upon which to operate with them. So that's very good. Now, the African Americans, typically the Democrats look at them as their voters. So they're going to look at them and say, uh-oh, we're going to lose votes. At the end of the day, I hate to say this, but it's the ballot box that drives them.
Sure.
Certainly some of them want to do the right thing, and if it's a coincidence that it's politically advantageous and the right thing, wow, that's such a great coincidence. But I do think the majority of them are driven more by political advantage than anything. And I'm terribly sorry to say that, because it sounds like I'm assigning heartlessness to them. But
no, not at all.
You get caught up in this political world. It doesn't take long, and then your votes are driven by political advantage, not by your heart and not by your conscience. It's very sad to see.
Now, there's something I'm very curious about. I saw many Orthodox Jews at the protest, men and women, and I wondered what brought them out. Have you had conversations with them? What is it specifically in their religion that makes them oppose vaccinations?
Well, the ingredients primarily
are mandatory vaccinations. Sorry.
There's pork ingredients, there's animal ingredients. They're not supposed to
crap
their blood.
Why is there pork ingredients in vaccines?
Why are there pork ingredients?
It's so.
Oh, you got me. Okay. I mean, there's a list of ingredients. It must be 700. You know, the list has got to be 700 items long, and who knows why they're in there. I mean, there's polysorbate 80, there's all kinds of different adjuvants to make them more effective, there's all kinds of preservatives, there's dyes. Why? I don't know. Nobody's ever explained it to me. Most legislators don't even want to acknowledge that any of the ingredients could be harmful to anybody.
Right.
And even if they look at the list, they kind of shrug like, oh, well, you know, so many kids are saved, it's worth it. It's like, are you kidding me? But what about the kids that are compromised because of it? Like, don't they count in your eyes? But back to the Orthodox Jewish plot, I think the reason there was such a good showing in New Jersey is because of what happened in New York. I mean, not to say that they won because we lost, but I think the profoundly, the heavy hit that we took here in New York motivated them to say, hey, this could be a reality. Just in the New York Times had a piece yesterday with a couple of quotes from one of the leading Orthodox Jewish lobbying groups saying, yeah, I wish we had gotten louder in New York, but it was kind of tricky because the measles was blamed on us, et cetera, et cetera. So it was kind of a tricky situation here in New York. I get that. But we didn't have the power of the Orthodox Jewish community in New York when everything was going down. And they had it in New Jersey, and that really had to help. And I hope they answer the fray here to make us, to repair us here, because
now,
we need it.
If I may, what is the power of the Orthodox Jewish community in all of this?
Well, votes. They are a voting bloc.
Mm-hmm.
They can contribute to, they're a generous voting bloc as far as supporting politicians that support them.
Mm-hmm.
They are large and tight population, and typically the leadership has a lot of influence with the vote. So,
do they have doctors and clinics and so forth that are their own, so to speak, where they are respected, or would they go to like a non-Orthodox Jewish pediatrician with their kids? How does that work?
That's a good question.
If you know, I'm pressing you on details of the Orthodox community.
You know, I don't really know, and I will ask that, because I do talk to quite a few of them. Often. They're an insular community, as we know. They have their own markets, their own doctors, and all that. And so where do the non-vaccinating ones go? I would imagine they have to go to doctors that respect their views.
Yeah.
So, you know,
and the Amish, really, similar questions with the Amish. And I remember reading an article possibly in the New York Times about how CDC types were going door to door in the Amish communities, and I'm surprised that they want to take on these communities who have coexisted peacefully for so long. And I'm surprised that they want to. It feels to me like they're taking on something that's going to backfire on them. But What do you
think? It goes to the arrogance of power. You know, they think that we've been quiet for so long, we will continue to be. And the Amish are inherently very peaceful, conformist sort of folks, right? So I think they were counting on everybody being too embarrassed to come forward, and every community, you know, every pocket. So I don't think they were counting on the Amish to fight back. The Amish are very much opposed to lawsuits, but they did it this time. Why? Because they saw two of their own get harmed from vaccines when those doors were knocked on. So the CDC came, the Department of Health, I'm sorry, came, said, you know, we're here to give you vaccines. Families, two daughters, both suffered vaccine harm. One had to be taken away in an ambulance because of the vaccine harm. And at that point, they said, you know what? We got to fight back here. This is insane. And they are. They are part of a lawsuit that's still working its way through the courts. We'll see how it all ends up. That's years away. But right now, we've got to come forward. I've seen the Amish attend several of our events. Up in the summer, we were in Albany, and they had the leaders from the communities come. We made sure they were seated in the courtroom. It was great. They were
fantastic.
Up in Bath, New York. Yeah. So we're slowly engaging a broad array of peoples and communities. And the more of us that exist that are vocal, the more comfortable people feel joining us. Like you say, in Trenton, people were there for the long haul. They didn't leave. They were happy. Of course they were, because they've been alone for so long. Finally, they come out of the closet, and they're like, wow, there's so many normal people just like me. This is great. Why would I leave them? So, you know, it's when we do physically get together, it's like it's so comforting spiritually for us. And if anything good can come out of the New York situation, and believe me, I would never ask for it to happen, you know, the togetherness, the unity, the lack of anonymity that we forced upon ourselves, you know, that's all going away. That's all slowly going away. And that's a great thing. And, you know, people are around the country looking at it going, wait a minute, you know, this is rising to the surface of a conversation. We are taking over social media. We're strong presence on social media because the regular old media won't cover us, present company excluded. So, you know, the New York Times snubs us. They had to print an article about New Jersey the other day because the numbers were so daunting. But any time the New York Times has ever come to me, no, I'm not going to help you out. All you do is trash an already persecuted community. Why would I bother with you? You twist my words. You never put in the good stuff. You make us look like idiots. I'll see you later. But that's changing.
So, let me ask you something. So there have been no federal government hearings on the safety or dangers of vaccines. Is that correct?
Not recently. The last one I went to in D.C. was in 2011. And it was, I have to say, I was really surprised by how honest it was. And hearing some of the representatives demand answers from, I think it was Colleen Doyle. Yeah, Colleen Doyle. She was the head of the CDC at the time. And they were demanding answers. She really was in the hot seat, and she couldn't get herself off of it. But nothing came of it. I walked out of that hearing. This was a little bit early on in the process for me. So I was kind of like, wow, that was a great hearing. But nothing ever came of it. We need somebody in leadership to take this on. You know, somebody in leadership in Congress or the Senate to take this on and say, you know what, this is something I really want to see the light of day. Nobody has done that yet. Bill Posey is obviously trying. He's
remarkable.
Not in any sort of leadership. Yeah, he's wonderful, you know, but I've approached my own Congressman Lee Zeldin. He is horrified by the fact that you can't directly sue a vaccine manufacturer. I walked him through the NCVIA. He's like, that's crazy. We have to change that. But that was 6 months ago. So where are you now, Lee? So, you know.
Yeah. And President Trump, of course, appointed, as soon as he became president, Robert F. Kennedy Jr. to head of Vaccine Safety Commission. What was it called?
Vaccine Safety Commission. And then he disbanded it in about 30 minutes. So
that was very quick, and it was never spoken of again. Do you have any inside info on that? Same old story, I guess it's safe to say.
Not specifically, but honestly, I have not lost faith in Trump. I know that he knows the truth with this issue. you know, I have faith that he will get to it in his second term.
Good.
I am certain that there are some very wealthy people who are affected by this issue, you know, that were supportive of him and still are. So we'll see what happens. I still have faith. I do.
What do you know about the CDC whistleblower William Thompson?
Yeah, good question. Where is he at? I actually published on my website, which is called The Truth Barrier, a few years ago, a text exchange between the CDC whistleblower and Andrew Wakefield. And I'm going to let you answer Christina's question.
Yeah, could you tell us what
he said to Andrew Wakefield, that he knows you, I know you were right. I know your career was destroyed. I hope I can help vindicate you.
Yeah, but could you talk about, give more details, because people who don't know about him as a whistleblower and what he blew the whistle on, would probably be interested in knowing what he blew the whistle on.
Oh, would you like me to talk about
it? Yes, of course.
Okay. Years ago, the William Thompson whistleblower story was the basis for the movie Vaxxed, whereby William Thompson, and this quick summary, he worked for the CDC. He was involved in studies regarding autism, and he bore witness to the falsification of studies. The studies actually, the real studies, pointed to African Americans having a far higher probability of getting autism. I think it was the cutoff of if they got their vaccines before 18 months old.
36 months.
36, I'm sorry. So if he he saw that the data pointed to African Americans having a significantly increased risk of autism. So what his team did is they just plucked the African Americans out of the study to not show that, and they got rid of the data. So his conscience bothered him, and he reached out to Brian Hooker, who has been foiling documents from the CDC for many, many years. That's why William Thompson, I guess, knew him. They connected. William Thompson essentially spilled his guts, and Brian Hooker, Andrew Wakefield, and others obtained data from him to prove this. And then William Thompson clammed up. The only way, because he was afraid. So the only way that we can get him to talk is with a subpoena.
Has he not been subpoenaed yet?
He hasn't been subpoenaed. No, that is what Bill Posey is looking to do. And he has been pushing to get William Thompson subpoenaed. So then William Thompson, and I think William Thompson wants to spill his guts in open court. But there's nothing forcing the issue. It hasn't risen to the level of anybody paying any real, you know, mind to it. So that's, I guess that's our job.
I'm
sorry, I got overexcited, and I'm sorry, I was speaking over everybody. But here's why I was, okay, at the time, this was 2014, all the mass media and so forth came out with a counter-propaganda campaign, and they said that this whistleblower had been, I think they strong-armed him into making a statement saying vaccines have saved lives, blah, blah, blah. But he didn't back down on his core whistleblowing act or statement, mm-hmm. but they wrapped it in this gauze of, well, vaccines still save lives. So they were trying to make him not the CDC whistleblower. So shortly after that, Andrew Wakefield and Polly Tommy sent me a text exchange that was on Andrew Wakefield's cell phone. It was actually between three people, between the CDC whistleblower, Dr. William Thompson, and Andrew Wakefield, and another thread that was between Dr. Wakefield's wife, Carmel Wakefield.
Mm-hmm.
So the texts said that it was William Thompson saying categorically, "You were right. I am sorry." Actually, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to link these text messages, the link to these pieces that I ran on my website, which is called The Truth Barrier, in 2015, must have been. And I'm going to put it in the link at the bottom of the show on our YouTube channel. I'll announce all that later, where to find it. But I really want to bring this back up because they tried to make it all go away, but he texted Andrew. Now, the next thing that the other side did was they tried to say that I had fabricated this text exchange on my, you know, computer, and that my mm-hmm. son had helped me. They had this really wild conspiracy theory.
And right. Of course, it has to be a son to help you. It has to be a 20-year-old. Anyway, whatever.
Yeah, right. Yeah. And by the way, speaking of my son, this would probably be a good time for me to say my son received a religious exemption from vaccination in growing up in New York City. I have a long history as an investigative pharmaceutical reporter, and I knew all the people. Which book am I thinking of? It doesn't matter which was the first book I read, but I was onto it, and I didn't want to vaccinate my son. I got a religious exemption. At the time, the letter, they weren't allowed to ask you which religion, never mind which religious belief within which religion it was that prohibited you from vaccinating, just that you had a religion. So those were the days, right? My son was born in 1994.
Mm-hmm. So, Celia, were you mentioning that that you're not allowed to sue pharmaceutical companies for vaccine injury?
Directly. Yes. Directly. Yeah.
Did that come about, and why is that even legal, that they are exempted?
It was Ronald Reagan.
And what's the rationale behind
that? If I may, and Rita, please boldly mm-hmm. interrupt me if I'm wrong here. I'm going to try to... Sometime in the, I suppose, early 1980s, the pharmaceutical companies were getting sued left, right. They were getting hammered by lawsuits, and they came to Ronald Reagan and said, "We're not going to produce vaccines for the government anymore." Am I right so far, Rita?
Yeah, they were getting hammered because kids were being destroyed by the DTaP vaccine.
DTaP, right.
DDP vaccine.
Harris Coulter, that's who I was thinking of. Yeah. Didn't he write books about, yeah.
Go ahead.
Yes, he wrote A Shot in the Dark. And just as an aside here, the DDTP was causing autism. That's in the literature from the 80s. So just when people say vaccines don't cause autism, well, you know what? They happen to cause them in the 80s.
What is
that's
that? Diphtheria and what? What is it?
Diphtheria, tetanus, and pertussis.
Okay.
Yeah, they've since redeveloped it. So now it's the acellular pertussis. So it's different, and presumably it's less harmful. Yeah, sure. But back then, it was just the D, the T, the P, and that was what was so harmful to children. And Ronald, this idea to indemnify them from lawsuits came up, and it was signed by Ronald Reagan, though I have to say hesitantly, because he said, you know, this is going to run into its own set of problems. So we'll see where it goes, but this is not a perfect solution.
Mm-hmm.
But he signed it, and then we have the NCBIA. So when you sue, say your child is harmed from vaccines, you only have 3 years to file a lawsuit. You have to prove causation, and that's really tough. The bar for causation is super high. 80% of the parents lose anyway. Up until a few years ago, the lawyer didn't even get paid until all was said and done. So there was no incentive for attorneys to spend hundreds of hours on these cases because they'd ruin themselves financially. Also, there's no real discovery process in the process, right? So you can't ask for documents from the other side. You can, but you won't get most of them. So therefore, you don't know the other side's case. And in any sort of other lawsuit, that discovery is par for the course. You give me, you show me yours, I show you mine. But you can't do that in the vaccine court.
Why?
Additionally, I don't know. I don't
trade
know the rationale
secrets.
For that. That's
why?
A good question. That's a really good question. I don't know. I don't know why
the whole thing is rigged.
They manipulate. I mean, the easy answer is, you know, they've manipulated Congress. They have got really great lobbyists that they pay a ton of money to. They contributed to campaigns, and they insisted that was in it. So when it was first enacted, and a lot of people don't know this, but when it was first passed, it actually had a provision in it where you could sue the doctor, but it was taken out. So now you can't sue anybody directly. You have to go through this ridiculous vaccine court. There's no jury. It's three special masters, two of whom are just predisposed to deny the parent. And it's a complete travesty of justice. And it takes years. And the highest number you can get for the harm suffered to your child is $250,000. Now, if your child needs care for the rest of his life, then you can get money on top of that.
That's a drop in the bucket, yeah.
Yeah, and who cares about the $250 anyway? You're talking about your child here. And the only way that you're going to get long-term care money is if your child is really destroyed. And who, $250? Are you kidding me? And that was the number back in the 80s? We haven't adjusted that at all? The whole thing is crazy and wrong, and it's hard to find a person that supports it. It really is hard to run this past somebody and say, hey, isn't that a good idea? No, that's not a good idea, and it's got to get changed. But having a champion step up and actually take steps to change it, which would be a Lee Zeldin, which would be a Pete King, which would be, you know, Tom Suozzi, Kathleen Rice, I'm just mentioning Congress people, or even Gillibrand and Schumer. Yeah, good luck with that. It's a tough row. The Democrats aren't going to touch it because they're so closely in bed with Big Pharma that, you know, they can't take money from oil and guns, so they take a lot of money from pharma.
Oh, that's a really interesting point. I want to ask you about that. What is it about Democrats? And I've seen it my whole career as well. Democrats love public health. They love pharma. They love what's going on with the Democrats and all of this? Because it seems almost without exception, it's Democrats who are voting for these draconian bills.
Yeah. It's a funny thing because it even in the time that I've been involved in this, the definition and the sort of position of the Democratic Party has changed. Years ago, when I first got involved, we had Democrats supporting the philosophical exemption. We had Democrats supporting protecting the medical exemption. And in fact, 2 years ago, we had a Democrat carrying a bill that protected the religious exemption. But the March of Pharma is so strong, and the propaganda that they put out there, the measles crisis, how they whip everybody into a frenzy. They made the assembly absolutely frantic over this in New York State. I spoke to the speaker's assistant. His name is Paul Upton, and he said to me, you know what, I don't buy into the hype either, but when the members go back to their districts, they have to be happy. Well, they're not happy now, I guarantee you that. But he didn't even believe it all. All 800 cases in a state of 19 million? That's like nothing. Plus, the measles cases weren't even really confirmed measles cases. The CDC never tested them for what type
measles
of measles
is
were.
Not a deadly disease. It's a virus that comes and goes. You know, it's not really. I mean,
no, of course it's not. I mean, that is even if you know, even if say you don't want to get measles, and everybody has that right. We don't even know what kind of measles this was. This was likely vaccine strain measles that was out there because people were getting vaccinated because the pharmaceutical companies ran such a strong PR campaign, putting fear into people who don't know any better, and people were running out and getting the vaccine, and it's live. So they were likely spreading it. And by the way, the Orthodox communities were getting measles deliberately to get it out of the way. I met a few Jewish women during the summer. They're like, yeah, I have 9 kids. They all had measles at exactly the same time. I got it out of the way. Well, how smart is that, Mom? You know, that's a good idea. So, you know, she nourishes them through the disease, the virus. What is the big deal?
Like,
I was born in the 60s. Mm-hmm. Everybody I know had measles. Everybody I know had chickenpox. Yep. So everybody's fine. It's not a deadly disease. It's nonsense. Not one single person has died directly from the measles in the past 20 years in the United States. There were 3 deaths that the victims had other things going on. If, of course, you want to believe the British Medical Journal. So that's where I read that. So 20 years, 3 deaths, and it was just like they had a bunch of other things going on with them where they had such a severely compromised immune system that they picked up other things. Measles was one of them, and they passed away. So that's the facts.
So, Rita, I want to ask you this, though. How much, at what, how do you, you've been in this fight for, what is it, 13 years? 14 years?
13, yeah, for about 14. Yeah. I had my own battle at the beginning. I filed a religious exemption, and I was not treated respectfully by my school district. That's what kind of launched me. So I got, you know, I filed the exemption in 06, so I started getting very active in 08. So anyway, that's my story.
Right. You know, this religious exemption thing strikes me as like an artificial barrier for other people who may not be religious, but don't want to, you know, want vax choice. I mean, just because you plug into a you get a special privilege to say you don't have to take vaccines because you plug into some belief system. I think there's something discriminatory about that for people who may not have that belief system or plug mm-hmm. into another belief system that is yeah, considered a religion. I mean,
right.
maybe I should make up my own religion.
So it worked for a long time. The religious exemption held for a long time. And
do you understand my point? It's still holding in Jersey. And my point is, well, that's interesting that all these people have that privilege because they belong to some religion.
What you're saying is actually what the pharma side is saying, right, Rita? They're saying that's phony. I mean, they're saying
benefit should be extended to people who don't play.
I know that's what you mean, but what they're saying is religious exemptions are rarely genuinely religious. That's one of the things that I saw
there's two different things going on here. What we really need you bring up a great point because, like I said before, like why should just now that our religious exemption is gone, let's have a real honest conversation about this, shall we, folks?
Yes.
And the thing is, why should religious people be the only ones allowed to opt out? No, we should have an informed consent exemption. We should have a conscientious belief
Amen.
Exemption because even though maybe it doesn't adhere to a religion, but if it's shocking to my conscience, that is connected to religion. That's connected to a bunch of other things. That is connected to my hesitation regarding the medical issues with vaccines. That is connected to the fact that I witnessed my own child be harmed by vaccines. That allowing my child to be vaccinated, it should be a conscientious belief exemption, in my opinion. Conscience, I don't know if that's a good marketing label for the Democrats, so maybe we want to say informed consent.
Is anybody documenting the numbers of vaccine injuries in this country? Is there somebody like keeping a tally of how many kids have been injured or killed by this?
Well, there is something called the Vaccine Adverse Event Reporting System, right? But it's a passive system. Doctors don't even know about it. So you have to really dig to report your kid to it. So the estimate, at least by Harvard, is that only maybe 1-10% of all the injuries are being reported. So you can put a big fat zero, at least, onto the amount of vaccine adverse events being reported, right? So they say there's 500 deaths. Well, no, actually there's 5,000. So I
5,000 reported.
No. There's 500 reported on VAERS, but since it only represents at best 10%, you can actually say there's 5,000 deaths. Right.
Wow.
And then there's all the other the host of other ailments. There's paralysis. There's brain death. There's everything, you know, before death. There's allergies, there's asthma, there's encephalitis, there's encephalopathy, which is brain swelling. There's all kinds of autism.
What's the estimate on that?
Well, they're all different. I don't know them off the top of my head, but you can go in. You can just Google up VAERS and get the numbers. But I sat through a presentation once with Del Bigtree, who went through the numbers. And there's a whole list of ailments that occur as a result of vaccines. We know this because, by the way, the package insert says so nobody can deny them. But, so you go through all the ailments and all the reported ailments to VAERS, and you'll see the numbers. And you can just pop on a zero onto that end of the number. So if there's 20,000 cases of allergies or asthma being reported as a direct result of vaccines, well, that's actually 200,000. Now we're talking really big numbers. So that's all I know as far as real, you know, tabulation, real keeping track. They don't want to keep track. They don't want to.
Have there ever been any tests? Have there ever been any studies of, say, long-term studies of non-vaxxed kids versus vaxxed kids?
Nothing that the other side has accepted. There is something going on right now. I'm not really at liberty to talk about because it's not my whole thing, though I support it. But we're working on something consistent with what you just mentioned right now to prove that the vaccinated have healthier outcomes than the not. That the vaccinated have poorer health outcomes than the unvaccinated.
So this has to be done surreptitiously because it's against the law not to vaccinate your kids. Right. So you couldn't conduct a study like this openly.
That's one of pharma's favorite tricks. Right there. Yeah. To say that it's unethical to have a placebo.
Oh,
they always do
God.
That. Oh, I'm very familiar with that.
Yeah.
We're talking to Rita Palma. We have a few minutes left. Rita, where can people, here's what I actually want to say, not just where can people find you and read you and follow you, but how can people know where's the next protest? Where shall I be? What, you know, is there like one portal to find out about protests?
Well, in New York right now, we have several. So I would suggest to people, follow me on Facebook. We are right now developing a website for a Children's Health Defense Chapter of New York. We just launched the paperwork. So we're working on a website. You can go to CHD right now, childrenshealthdefense.org, and I'm pretty sure we have some sort of portal into New York. It's not as robust as we would like it to be, but we're trying to put information on as much as we can. We don't have any protests planned right now, but you know, we just got out last week. We had something going on in Albany, so we're just kind of recovering from that, and we're planning our next moves. But any kind of idea or campaign that's out there, I post probably 3 or 4 things a day, different ideas people are doing throughout the states, and you know, ways to connect people. So people hop on and they find people on my page. So John Gilmore is actually sort of my partner in all of this, so I would suggest people go on his Facebook page. He has a website, Autism Action Network.
Autism Action Network.
Network.org, right? I would suggest to get on his mailing list. He sends out emails. If people opt not to be on Facebook, by the way, you can use a phony name and nobody will know. A lot of people do that because they don't want to be outed at this point for their jobs or whatever. They just don't want to be stalked by pharma. Yeah. I haven't seen a problem in my life from that. I don't know why.
Most of what we see on television is abstracted issues of democracy compared to this. To me, this is the most important issue. We don't live in a democracy. We live in a pharmaceutical totalitarian state, and it's getting worse. And if we don't fight, we don't have a
democracy.
Talk
about predatory capitalism.
You know, sorry. Yes. I don't mean to sound grim, but I do mean to sound, this is a very alarming situation. And I think people mostly are paralyzed because they think it couldn't possibly be that our government's going to come after us and make us harm and maim and possibly kill our kids. That just can't be happening. Don't you think there's a lot of just sheer disbelief?
Yes. I think that, and the shock is sort of settling in, and once it does settle in, then people are motivated to actually do something because they're starting to see the reality. But yeah, that's exactly what's going on. And these outrageous sort of conspiracy theory ideas that have been bantered about, will they're becoming a reality? Do you know there's a bill that builds, that creates internment camps for people who don't want to vaccinate if there's an epidemic?
What is that bill
called? Who introduced that bill?
N. Nick Perry, he's out of, I think it's East New York. The bill number is 099 in the Assembly. It does not have a companion in the Senate, so maybe other people see how outrageous. But you know what? What happens with bills? Even the bad ideas, they take root, and then they start to grow.
Oh, that is horrific.
Yeah. And then pharma sits on the sidelines, waits for blood in the water, and goes their Madison Avenue marketing, their advertising companies, say, okay, whip up a frenzy.
Here's why we need internment camps. Oh, this is unbelievable. God bless you, Rita Palma. We're out of time. I want to give a very quick shout out to Jen McCormick and Carly Simon, who told me all about how I have to talk to Rita Palma. I'm so glad to have met you, and we do hope you'll come back soon and often. And we're going to be revisiting this issue. Trust me.
Okay. Thank you so much for having me on. It was great.
Thank you, Rita.